star so bright. Pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kinda snuffy, cold chill up your spine. It'll get your ass moving, sun will burn in daylight.
Howdy there, I'm Matt McKinley and we're burning daylight. Welcome to Burning Daylight, the only podcast for the working cowboy.
Well, howdy there, daylight burners. Happy, I'm not sure when I'll post this, but anyway, I had a good guest scheduled and timeline didn't work out. So we'll try again, but Miles Fadinas will be back on the show. He's got some stories for Africa, and he's I don't know exactly what he's got in mind, but he said he's looking for a couple cowhands that might be interested in some work, and I don't know what all that entails, but we'll get into it whenever we can. But I had a request to post the episode about the U.S. Camel Corps that I did back. I had to look it up. It was January 20th of 2021, so almost 3 years ago. Holy shit. So this is an episode that one of the rabbit holes that I went down and found a cool little story about Jefferson Davis before he was president of the Confederate States of America, when he was the Secretary of War for the United States of America. And a camel known as the Red Ghost, and a fella named Haj Ali. But as Americans do, we Americanized the shit out of his name, and he became High Jolly. And it's a really, really cool little story, and I hope you enjoy it. And for those of you that's already heard it, well, I hope you enjoy it again. Maybe you forgot about it. And the audio is a little rough. I lost the original audio recording, so I had to just rip the YouTube file. And it was before it had real fast internet. So the audio is not the greatest, but I'll clean it up as much as I can. And once again, I hope you guys enjoy it. Have a good one. And let's get into a little story about the U.S. Camel Corps. All right. Year is 1883. Early spring. Maybe it's late spring. Spring, 1883. In southeastern Arizona Territory at the time. A little place called Eagle Creek. Women with tended to a house. The men were away checking on their sheep herds because Geronimo was back in the territory. Sheep slaughtered stuff. And they went out to survey the damage and see if there was anything. So the two women are bustling around. Spring gets water. And the other lady, she stays around cooking lunch, doing whatever it is she's doing in a pioneer back in three, whatever it is they're doing. Next thing you know, dogs start barking up the storm, and she hears a bunch of screaming, and she rushes to the window if it's safe to go outside, and she sees what she could describe as something enormous. Red, being ridden by the devil. Just overcome with fear. Barricaded the doors and the windows. Just kind of hid under the table and prayed. With all of her might. Two men returned home that night. They had to really talk her into opening the door, finally get her calmed down, and tells them what happens. This enormous red monster written by the devil. And counts the whole thing, and they get some torches and a lantern, and they go checking out there by the spring, and they find the other woman who was pregnant, and she is stomped into the dirt where she's almost flat, bruised all over. The tracks they find, cloven hoof animal, but about twice as big as a horse's hoof. And the medical inspector, or the I guess it had been the coroner of the county there, wouldn't have believed it if he hadn't seen. He'd come out and saw the tracks himself, and the hoof prints were there on the bruises of the body, and it just seemed almost too weird to be true. Well, a couple days later, several miles up on a place called Chase's Creek, area of Rio, San Francisco, they were sleeping in their tent, middle of the night. They called it just ungodly scream, and a tent came crashing down on their heads, and they heard, as they said, an ungodly scream and the pounding of hooves, and looked out the, then, you know, they finally got untangled from the tent and everything. They looked up just in time to see what they saw was a really, really tall horse crashing off into the brush. Well, they head down to the local mining town called Ore. I'm not real sure where that's at. Ore, Arizona. They tell their story there at the bar, and of course, you know, it's the Old West, and particular Arizona territory, pretty sparsely populated, and tall tales abound. And well, these miners, they come. There's a, you know, handful of miners back up, and they show them around where their camp was, and sure enough, they see the tent all smashed up, the tracks. Then one thing that I forgot to mention with the lady that got stumped, that they found several tufts of really, you know, like 3 or 4 inch long red hair. Well, word gets out pretty quick there in, you know, in Wilderness, Arizona, apparently. Tall tales spread, and, you know, over the next month, around several different campfires, one guy says, well, he chased it. It was, must have been a cowboy or something, probably going to rope him. And then it just vanished in the thin air. Well, another one, he saw it kill and just eat a grizzly whole, a grizzly bear. Killed a grizzly and then ate him. And, boy, people were pretty riled up, as you can imagine. You know, you got Geronimo on the loose. You don't even have to make up shit about that guy. He was, you know, he was plenty scary, and he was real, 100% real. But now, got this red monster that, you know, it's stomping pregnant women to death, and, you know, vanishes into thin air. And, you know, and then this one story, a little while later, freight caravan stopped off for the night, got woken up. Well, in this case, what they said, just have to excuse me for just a minute. I got to prepare you. Have a seat. A good one. They were woken up what they described as
screaming, shrieking, about 30 foot tall, black winged beast scattered the camp, mules, knocked over two wagons, and smashed a bunch of shit up. It hobbled their mules, so luckily they didn't go too far. But among the stuff that got smashed up was a couple kegs of whiskey. Which, conveniently, they were smashed up, so hard to say if they'd been broken into or not. But that might explain why they were describing a 30-foot tall winged beast. But, turned out not to be the case. This ghost, which got nicknamed the Red Ghost because of all the red hair that they can find in hills. About a month later after the original attack, rancher up on Salt River, which is about 80 miles northeast of Eagle Creek, where the original site happened, rancher is named Cyrus Hamblin. He's out checking for slicks out on his property, Maverick cattle. And he spots what all he can see is a huge red animal, kind of just moving through, not really crashing, just kind of cruising along, kind of like elk. And but something wasn't right, and he admitted that, you know, not a whole lot scared him. Frontier Arizona rancher. When Geronimo's out galloping whites and just wreaking havoc on the area. And but he said this sure enough made this hair on the back of his neck stand. And but he not wanting to be shaken too much, he stayed there. Pretty soon this old red beast kind of moves out into the open where get a better look at him. He's about a quarter mile away, he says. And what he sees, no doubt, a camel. What a camel is doing up on Salt River in Arizona, he doesn't know. He had heard tell that, you know, in a different part of the state, over there near the California border, that, you know, they used those things quite a bit. But what it was doing all the way up there, he didn't know. But one thing that was also real weird about it is he happened to see something on this old camel's back, and he couldn't be for sure, but he was thinking that it was possibly man. Couldn't confirm it. That's sure what it looked like. Osiris Hamblin had a pretty good reputation. He was a well-known, well-respected rancher in the area. People pretty well just took him at his word. Well, before we finish this little story, we'll have to go back to the beginning of a little thing called the U.S. Camel Corps. Back in April 26, 1843, Army captain named George C. Crossman wrote to the War Department recommending the use of camels for transportation. After he had read some writings from a general named Edward F. Beale, who, if you remember back to in my Kit Carson episode, Battle of, can't think of the battle, but anyhow, if you remember that, when Kit Carson had to walk for days barefoot, something like to go get reinforcements, got slaughtered by vaqueros, in the Mexican War. So anyhow, this General Beale was one of the fellows that was with Kit Carson. And if you remember, came riding out of the, they finally come riding out of the desert, and their horses were so, just so wore down that they end up spooking this, group of vaqueros, chasing them off a little bit, but then, those old vaqueros looked back and they saw that they were on some really shitty horses and mules, or just maybe not shitty, they were out, played out. And we're just about to wipe all these guys out. Well, anyhow, after that whole ordeal and that whole expedition, General Beale had a book with him that talked about travels throughout the Orient and Arabia, Persia, and China. Of course, camels pretty extensively. Well, camels can work in the desert there in the Middle East. Why can't they work in the deserts of Arizona? So he was writing about all that, became a pretty, I wouldn't say a connoisseur, but he became a champion for the camel. Transport animal, pack animal for the U.S. Army. Captain George C. Crossman, he agreed with him, and he officially wrote this War Department, but it pretty well got ignored. But this Beale kept working on the case. Yeah, he could see how these camels could move troops and supplies, quicker and more efficiently. So a camel, I was reading up on it. I didn't realize how little camels, and they spit, and I guess kind of known to be ill-tempered, that'll play. Anyhow, but they can, some of them can go, if they're on like lush green grass and a kind of a wet year, they can go like 4 months without actually physically drinking water from the grass and stuff. But in the desert, they can go up to 11 days without drinking water. And I guess their body temperature varies about 11 degrees throughout the day. They'll have a body temperature and all the way up to like 4 during the afternoon. They collect a bunch of heat in the day and then radiate it off at night. Fucking weird animal, I gotta tell you, but apparently, that's how God made them. That they're meant to carry shit across the desert. So, anyhow, they finally get the attention of a senator from Alabama named Jeff Davis. He might recognize the name. But anyway, he, in 1852, he is appointed Secretary of War, President Franklin Pierce, and confirmed in 1853, one of the first things that he takes up, besides Indian affairs, he takes up this this cause for the camels, seeing how the huge benefit troops and supplies, particularly supplies. Well, when you're packing a horse, you can only pack a couple hundred pounds. Pack horse, mule a little bit. But you could safely pack about 6 pounds on camels and teach them to kneel down, so you load it up there and haul a whole bunch of stuff. And of course, they didn't have to drink anything either. So they also said they can shrink about 30% of their body weight. Hydration, they're fine. No problem. They don't even lose 30% shrink on those, and they just keep on trucking. Well, anyhow, Jeff Davis he finally gets to lobbying around for it, and 1855, Congress finally approves $30,000 to go purchase some camels. So the race is on. And they can't find any in the U.S., so they send a major, Henry C. Wayne, and David D. Porter, I believe are both somehow related to General Beale fella, camel with. And they head over to Tunis, Syria. Anyway, somewhere there in. And they, all told, they acquire about 34 head of good camels. Apparently, there's a couple different species. That's the cows. I don't know if you call a camel a bull. Or, anyhow. And then they hired six teamsters, cameleers. I don't know what the term is, but the guys that are driving the camels, camel bulls. There was like four Arabs and that, and including a guy who born name was Philip Tedrow. I day he back to Philip Tedrow, but he's more well known by a fella named High Jolly. His Arab name was Haji Ali, but being the dumb time to figure out how to. So they called him High Jolly. Anyway, he was one of the six original teamsters that got hired. And they began the trip back across the pond, and they landed in Indianola, Texas. May 14th, 1856. Along the way, one of the male camels, one of the prize studs, had died, but there was also two calves born along the way, so they came out one ahead. Landed them there, fattened them up a little bit, and immediately they figured out that we Americans are not camels. But we floated those fuckers across the sea on a boat. Took them about 6 months, that or however long. Long time. Long damn time. And by the time those camels got set foot on solid ground, they went nuts. They went bucking around. And then the horses and mules, they said, fuck all of that. I don't like that thing, what it is. It scared the fuck out of me. And in the meantime, you've got 35 head of camels frolicking around, just giving her hell. The townspeople are... I would love to have been just a fly on, you know, on a street post as they're, you know, like on the dock as you're watching... Because you had to know that there was word coming about a bunch of camels getting dropped off at the port of Indianola. So there had to have been pretty big spectacle coming from miles around. A bunch of them probably didn't even know what the fuck a camel was. What it looked like, let alone what it looked like. But here they come, and immediately these things, I'm just picturing them acting about like a whole. Does when you move them in fresh pen and you know, just bellering, except I don't know exactly what camel makes, but frolicking and bucking around. Boy, I had to scare the fuck out of some people. And by all accounts, the horses, even good broke horses, now they say, fuck you. It takes quite a while to get them used to that. Anyhow. They let them fatten up there, and they get everybody kind of settled in, and then they decide, well, better make a trip on these fuckers, and old High Jolly and his merry band of Arabian camel teamsters. They set off with the U.S. Army. All right. Okay, there we go. The initial camel caravan was 1857, and they made their way from Mexico to Eastern California, roughly along the same path that the historic Route 66 would follow later on. But that was basically it for the U.S. Camel Corps. If you have noticed the time frame when all this was happening, 1857 was first camel expedition made, and then they made several of them back and forth. Tried them as carry mail and shit. They used them as pack animals, and they were really kind of brutal on these. Some of these generals were kind of like the old Nazi witch doctors in the concentration camp, forming all weird circles on like the deformed, you know, anybody with a sort of abnormal born or hearted kids, challenge, however you call it. But that's kind of how they were with these camels. They're just like, how long can we actually make them? And what happens when you push them too far without water? Apparently some of them would fight like hell, and some of them would just keep on walking until they collapsed and died. But they were able to find out that about 4 days in wretched heat, heavy load, was about as far as they could push a camel without really needing some water. They could push them a little bit farther than that, but not consistently. But by all means, they outperformed the horses and the mules by not even close. It was very successful on that front. But however, 1857, that was 4 years before 1861, which familiar with American history, pretty significant year because that was Civil War broke out, and the last thing on anybody in the military's mind was a bunch of fucking camels out in Texas. So, basically, the camel program was scrapped. The guy that was, you know, that was kind of instrumental in getting the whole thing going, Mr. Jeff Davis, he's now the president of the Confederate States of America, so he's obviously not real concerned about the damn camels. So, anyhow, it's all a state of disarray, and in those couple years, they had managed to buy. I never did find out how many. Could never find a concrete camels they purchased, but I know that they got a bill introduced to purchase 1,000 head of camels, but it was never signed into law. And I don't know. Much as I can tell, they must have had a couple hundred. Whether how many they bought, I don't know. Second voyage they made back with 41 head. They tried to implement a breeding program, but that got shot down pretty quick because they're like, hey, how far can we fuckers walk without water? I don't care about reading how far we kill these things. Um Anyhow, so they basically, once the Civil War breaks out, they decide that's enough. And there was basically two bases, I think, two forts that use these camels. One was in Texas. One was up in I think Colorado. I guess luckily for the U.S., there wasn't weren't really any camels in Texas, so they didn't have to worry about the Confederates having a camel cavalry charge. Boy, that would be something. You're behind this little dirt berm waiting on the Confederates. Storming. I might pay to see, actually. Anyhow, there was one fort called Camp Verde, which I believe is in Mexico. It was a Union Army outpost, but it gets captured by the Confederates. And at the time, depending on who you talk to, the Union officers say there was over 100 head of camels there. But the Confederate States of America gave a receipt after the war for the takings, or when it was captured. Anyhow, one of the receipts that they gave them was for 80 camels with a couple of horses. Regardless, this particular bunch, they managed to round up about ahead of them, and the rest of them were just out wandering out in the vast expanse of Texas or New Mexico. And then there was another 60 head sold at auction, and that was basically the end of the U.S. Camel Corps. Very short-lived, and like pretty much every other government program implemented, highly efficient, and a giant waste of money. Could have been a pretty ingenious strategy going forward if it would have been implemented, but the government, there's very little forethought to it, so U.S. Camel Corps came and went. Well, this fella named High Jolly, I guess to take it back, he was hired by the two army officers, Wayne and Porter, somewhere there in the Middle East. This guy was he was living in Turkey at the time, port on the sea, on a port city. His mother was Greek, father was Syrian, and he was I don't know if he was raised Muslim or if he converted to Islam or what. But anyway, by the time he was 25, he'd made a full conversion or whatever. He made his pilgrimage to Mecca, and he changed his name from Pedro Haji Ali Jolly. And he got hired on. Some accounts say he was a really best of the best when it came to camel herding. Other accounts say that people that they hired to tend to these camels, even less than the people that were sent to buy these camels. Who knows? I'm sure it's a little somewhere in between. Anyhow, he makes the initial camel caravan process. And after that, he just sticks on with his army. And he goes with them on scouting missions, and really with the kind of a funny story. The Confederates, by the way. I don't know for sure. Didn't mention specifically. But among the receipts turned over with Camp Verde turned back horses. 12 mules, 2 horses, 80 camels, 2 Egyptians. Because, you know, the Confederates. They were going to have a bunch of black dudes. Egyptian. Luck of the draw, High Jolly wasn't Egyptian. He was Turkish, Greek, Syrian. He stayed with the Union Army through any sort of combat during the Civil War, but he was around for basically the whole time when they were fighting the Apaches. He stayed on as a scout and and a teamster, camels. I really don't know what you call those. Camel team. He was really until Geronimo surrendered. So after that, he kind of took up prospecting. About 50 years old at the time, but he married a little Mexican lady and lived in town for a while. Eventually, he just he missed the desert, so back out prospecting, left his wife and daughters. Left them, just went out prospecting. Gone for 13 years, and he finally came back, went back to his wife and begged her, let him come in, and fuck you, don't like you anymore. So he went back prospecting. And, he was, seemed like he was quite the character. He, somehow managed as, him and one of the other original Teamsters, Greek fell. And after they left the army, they were up in Colorado. Mining, and something happened with the mine boss getting killed, caved in. Well, those two were kind of on their own, and the Greek fellow went to California, got married, and High Jolly just desert. He apparently hated Germans. Growing up there in Turkey, fought against Germans, French, and the Syrians. Hated them with fiery passion. And I guess one of the times when he was hauling ore or something for the mines, there was a bunch of German settlers picnicking without having some schnitzel. And they must have been wearing their lederhosen. He recognized them as pissed him right the fuck. Stampeded the wagon right through the middle of their pickup or their picnic. I don't know if anybody heard or what. There was a bunch of sauerkraut and beer and pastries rotten in the sun for a couple weeks after that. But anyhow, he ended up dying. Basically broke, penniless. Was very well respected among the army officers. And they even tried to get him to them. But being the bureaucracy, the very particular general, given all of that, they're, not all that surprising that he never got his pension. But know, there was after all those camels got sold, and you know, there was a bunch of them that just ended up roaming all throughout the Southwest, Nevada, Texas, Arizona, sighting all over the place, all the way up until like 1934. But whether this story is even remotely true or not, in 1902 was living in Quartzsite, Arizona. That one dusty night in the saloon, an old prospector ran through, swinging doors, screaming, "Camels! Camels are coming!" Still shaking, the man takes twigs from an unattended bottle at the bar. Bartender grabbed it back from his callous hands, none too pleased. He was then invited for a drink and to tell his tale by another local patron. Launched in what he seemed to think was a near-death experience, another quiet prospect interrupted it. "Hard, reckon about where you see that camel?" With fervor, the frightened prospector gave the best directions he could as he relaunched the story for all who would listen. Another prospect quietly slipped out the door. That quiet elderly prospector was in fact High Jolly himself. A few days later, he was found in the desert, covered in sand. Quote said, this is a quote from "A Monument to a Camelier," Arizona Republic. There was a frozen smile on his face. Arms were locked about the great shaggy camel. That too would tread the burning sands no more. Some insist the camel was smiling also, although it must have been toothy. So, legend has it that High Jolly had caught himself a stray camel in his last act on this earth. Camels too would die in strife. Anyhow, apparently they were happy. Going back where we started here. So Cyrus Hamblin, he spotted this big old camel. Pretty sure there is a man on its back. And about a couple weeks later, and you know how, like I said, all these stories, they spread real quick. Well, about five different prospectors, they were out prospecting, doing their thing, and they spotted him. They go charging up to him, and they get to where they think it's shooting to. They just start sending lead downrange, just boom, 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 boom. But apparently they can't shoot worth shit or whatever. This old camel, he just goes tromping off into the distance at a rifle range. Not mattered apparently. But as he's running off, they notice something falls off his back. Well, they run up there, and sure enough, it's a human skull. What in the hell is human skull doing? Well, then that starts a whole new round of tall tales and old wives' tales about, well, now there's a band of bandits, I guess. Banditos just running around, and they catch you. They'll strap you to a camel and just leave you dead. There's also stories that, well, maybe this, maybe it was just some traveler that headed out to California, strike it rich, gold mine. Well, going through the desert, ran out of water, and he was getting weak, so he just tied himself to that camel, hoping that thing would find some water eventually, and there he died. Well, either way, they're pretty sure that however he died, or however he got up there, whether the guy was dead when he got up there, and tied him to it, or maybe he was alive. I don't know. Or maybe he tied himself. However the case may be, they're pretty sure that that old body got to stinking, and it was driving that camel crazy, and that's why he was attacking all this shit. Got to be known as the Red Ghost. And, boy, it was just a big old hubbub around the Arizona territory. And a couple days after these prospectors start shooting, that's when the freight caravan finds him. Huge black winged beast. Well, shortly after that, this the last violent encounter they had with the old Red Ghost, but cowboy from the Anchor JOT just east of Phoenix, he was cruising through some country, and he came across this Brandon trap that they weren't good. They only used it Brandon once a year. Brandon sees quite a ways off, but there was something down in there. He goes over to check. Sure enough, it's that damned old camel. And he goes ahead and ropes him a camel because he's a cowboy. That's what we do, goddammit. And well, apparently this crazy old camel not having much of it, and he came right back up that rope. Horse rears up, and old camel keeps barreling through, kind of side checks him. Horse comes crashing down. This is east of Phoenix, Arizona, so that's kind of in the puncher country. So I don't know if he was tied off or if he was roping with a long rope, but either way, old camel got away. Never did hear what happened with the cowboy, whether the horse got drug off or, you know, he lost his rope or what the hell. Obviously, he probably lost his rope. But it was a long time coming for this old camel, but he was finally came to, he met his match. February 5th, 8th. Newspaper called the Mojave County Miner reported it. Headline: Phantom that terrified all Arizona for a time. And the article: Another ghost is laid. Another of the tribe of gaunt hobgoblins that keep the romance of the mysterious southern deserts is gone. Another of the unearthly dangers of the timid Mexican prey again. Do Hastings of Orr, priest that exercised this. Do has a ranch a little above the gold camp on the San Francisco River. Woke up one, saw through the cabin, a big red camel banqueting in his turnip patch. Do took a dead rest on the windowsill, blazed away, got the camel. He went out to examine the beast. He found that it was all scarred up and had evidently had a very hard time. Covered with a perfect network of knotted rawhide strips. They had been on him so long that some of the strands had cut their way into them. Well, Red Ghost is... And even though there was... It was basically the end of the U.S. Camel Corps as we knew. There were still sightings all around the Southwest. And there's speculation that there's still some wild camels. Still remnants of the ill-fated U.S. Camel Corps. All in all, gotta say it was, if had it not been for the Civil War, there might have been a more storied history of Camel Corps. Although it's probably not likely. whatever reason. Cattlemen were not much in the way of, well, I guess the people I know are not much in the way of goat herders. Camel herders, quite a few sheep herders. But for the most part, deal with cattle and horses. Camels. And the mule skinners for the army not get along whatsoever with damn camels. The men hated them, and then camels, apparently they were more ill-tempered than the mule, especially around that spit at you. And just be a general all-around grade-A asshole, apparently. And that was kind of the observation of General Beale, who was all of it. He grew to where he loved these camels. Hello. Apparently. But he said I think he said it pretty accurately. Camel is not used to a greater extent in the U.S. military. It's Americans themselves, not the animal. But it, boy, it made for some good tall tales for many years to come. Unlike most government programs, they don't have stories. So, bravo to you, the brave men and women of U.S. Camel Corps. The Red Ghost. Hi, jolly fella. I'm going to... stories on him. Pretty interesting. Yeah. But, anyhow. Hope you enjoyed that episode. I think it was kind of... Make sure you go submit videos for the Fancy Loop contest if you got any. Accepting those till March 1st. I also have a chance at winning Hondas from Nick Loot. We got next Friday, the 29th, Elko, Nevada, at the stage door, 7 o'clock Pacific time. Taking the stage with Hugh, Jake Houston, and Matt and Rachel Wilson, Kinley. Good time. Tell jokes, tell poems, sing some songs, and just have a good old time. So make sure you check that out. Bull Session live on Patreon this Thursday. Every Thursday, all the video content out podcast wise Patreon. So if you're not subscribed, make sure you do that. $1 a month. Bull Session every Thursday. So. Anyhow, thanks again for tuning in. I thank you all for your support. Thanks all those that have subscribed already. And thank you all for supporting this. Hope you have a good week. Happy Inauguration Day or something. Move your ass. We're burning daylight.
Up in the morning beneath the stars so bright, pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kind of snuffy, cold chill up your spine, you'll get your ass moving some, we're burning daylight. Get your ass moving, son, you're burning daylight. Burning daylight. the job done right.